Welcome to the Mommy Oyoyo podcast. Mommy Oyoyo is a platform for the modern African woman to talk about anything and everything related to motherhood in today's world. Join me, Berry Dakara, every week as we tackle the good, the bad, the ugly, the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses, and everything else in between. Mommy Oyoyo is your plug for real life gist and experiences about being a mother, African style. Hi, Lola.
Hello, how are you?
I am tired. How are you?
same. Punch drunk, tired. You know how you just get so tired, you just start, you get a little goofy. That's where I'm at.
I definitely understand that. Like I was telling you, before this recording started, I had to take a power nap because I'm just like, see, I just cannot today. But thank you so much for being on the podcast today. Could you please tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, your family life, work, all anything that you want to share about you and yourself?
Okay, sure. My name is Lala Dada Ali. I was born and raised in Chicago. I'm an attorney, a wife, a mom of two, a recovering type A personality. I grew up in Chicago, like I said, and I currently live in Texas now.
Texas. Well, okay, Texas. It depends. No, I have a weird relationship with Texas. I hate Houston with a passion. Hate Houston with a passion, with a very fervent passion. There's nothing in this world that would make me live in Houston. Never.
What did Houston do to you?
Not what Houston did. The people that I know there. Let's just say some past relationships and like some bad blood, and I'd rather not revisit.
Got it.
But Dallas, I love though. I love Dallas.
Okay, I'm in the Dallas area, so
that works.
So I hope I pass. Yeah.
You're cool people. Okay, so you mentioned a little bit about yourself. You should have mentioned that you have a podcast too, and you're not just a lawyer. Of course, I'm a lawyer. You're not just a lawyer. Guys, I went on her, and this is something that I've started doing recently, is I look up my guests on LinkedIn. I went on her LinkedIn page, and I was like, is this who I've been talking to? Oh my God, I'm not worthy.
So silly. So silly.
No. I was like, how did I not know all of this? This is the kind of person I'm talking to. Okay, well.
I'm just a lawyer just trying to make my way through this
world. You're not just a lawyer. You're not going to go into it. But you guys, if you feel like researching Lola Dada Ali afterwards, go and look at it. Then come and send me a message on Instagram and say, tell me what you think, because she's not just a lawyer. Anyway, so the reason why we're having this conversation today is because you've got two children who are autistic, and I know for the average Nigerian, it's kind of like a heavy topic because it's not something that we really talk about. We kind of shy away from talking about things that are I guess uncomfortable, but you guys already know who are listening. It's Mommy Oyoyo. We talk about anything and everything related to motherhood. And autism is part of a lot of Nigerian families' life. And so, Lola, could you please just share about your two children, when you noticed with both of them that something wasn't quite right, getting to their diagnoses, and just anything that you feel comfortable enough sharing, we'd love to hear that, please.
Sure. Okay. So, like you mentioned, I have two babies on the spectrum. One is now 9 and a boy, and then my baby girl is 7. But the way in which autism manifested itself in both kids were pretty different. So my older child, he was talking, he was counting to 100, great eye contact, very conversational. And then all of a sudden, it was like this slow degradation of skills. So, where do I even, his eye contact slowly kind of just went away. It was very difficult for him to look us in the eye. And he started exhibiting something called echolalia. And that is the repetitive nature of speech. So I remember one time I counted on the way home from the store, he asked me the same question 17 times. Just over and over and over, like his brain was on autopilot.
Oh, wow.
And he went from playing with other kids with toys and sharing toys to he would now take those toys and move it to the corner and just play with those toys by himself. So it was in a span of about 1 to 2 months, it just completely changed his behavior and just how he was acting.
How old was he at the time?
He was 2.5. He was 2.5. And then he was almost 3 when he was diagnosed with autism. And then baby girl was like totally different. So she was more of like a failure to launch. So that means that like around 9 months, she said mama, but then she didn't really add that many words. And then her eye contact went away before age 1. And she was just exhibiting different behaviors. She would pull out her hair in clumps. You just seemed to be in distress. So where we lived at the time, the earliest you can diagnose your child with autism is 18 months. So around 12, 13 months, I called a child psychologist and told them about my concerns. And we literally booked the assessment for the day she turned 18 months. And it was that day that my husband and I got the second autism diagnosis, which was about a year after our first one. So we were still adjusting to the first child when we were now, when, you know, now this second diagnosis was like heaped upon us.
Wow.
It was a lot. It was a lot. The initial reaction for my son was more like, okay, we could see this looked more like the autism I was familiar with because my baby brother also has autism. But my baby girl, because she's a girl, first of all, autism is way more common in boys than girls. And it's interesting because when our first child was diagnosed, my husband and I were like, oh, okay, well, she's a girl. It's a lot less likely. So we're in the clear. And then she started exhibiting behaviors of her own.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
It's heavy. It's a lot.
Really is, because for me, right, if I had, you know, I have just one child, but like if there was something not right with my first child, but I feel like there would have been this battle in my mind between should I try again for another child and hope for the better, but then there would also be this fear of what if it's the same thing or worse. Like, did that ever cross you guys' minds? Did you ever like talk about something like that?
Yeah, so we didn't. My second child was already here when the first child was diagnosed. So it's a little bit different. Like if I was in, I'll put it this way, knowing that we weren't sure what the future would look like, we did not look to have a third child. Just because, like, if you go to the Autism Speaks website, just financially, the cost of raising a child on the spectrum during the entire life cycle is about $1 million.
Oh, wow.
So our second child was already here and was about, how old, I'm trying to remember, about 6 months, almost 6 months old-ish when the first child was diagnosed. I don't know what I would have done if it was just my first. There is new research out now that if you space them out long enough, there is a reduced chance of having autism in the subsequent child. But once the second child had autism, honestly, I was just in super mama bear protective mode. And it's just like, okay, how are we going to pay for these treatments? How are we going to take care of these babies? That's where my mind was at.
Oh. And that's understandable too, because to be honest, and this is just, I guess, I'm not sure why it went over my head about like the financial impact of raising a child with autism, because it's not just, you know, raising them as kids, because you have mm-hmm. to consider them as adults as well.
Yeah. And
you have mentioned your brother having autism as well. Is he at home with your parents, or is he?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So he's at home with my parents who are aging. They're both now in their 70s. So we do have to think about how that is going to look. I do have another sibling. We've done estate planning. It's good to have a lawyer in the family. We've done estate planning to figure out what succession begins to look like once my parents pass on, when those days come. And it's not it's not easy. You got to think about, okay, where do they live now? You got to think of benefits he has. You got to think of money going into a trust. And it's just, there are a lot of permutations to the permutations. So that's there too. So I really struggled with, in the early days of my children's diagnosis, I was really racked with worry. To be honest, I was thinking, okay, how am I going to take care of a sibling and two babies on the spectrum into my old age? Like, what does that look like? And some days, quite frankly, I would just be paralyzed with fear. I mean, I would just cry and think about, okay, how is this going to work? Am I going to be able to give them all the best lives I can possibly give them? You know, my husband and I are just two people. Like, how in the world is this going to work? And yes, my brother's there, but can we do this? And then I realized that, you know, that old adage of, you know, you can't eat a whole elephant. You have to just take it one chunk at a time.
Right.
And I really adopted this motto of one day at a time. And those that are close to me, even people I work with, like, I literally say one day at a time, like 20 times a day. At least. And I do it as a ministry, not just to others, but to myself. I've just learned to give myself a lot more grace.
And just as a regular person, just as a mom, even, we all need to give grace to ourselves sometimes. Not even sometimes, but constantly, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel any kind of like guilt? Like, did you feel like maybe if I'd done something different, I wouldn't have had two children with autism? Because I know that like, if something happens with your child, you all, most moms automatically feel like it's their fault, even mm-hmm. when it's absolutely nothing to do mm-hmm. with them. Did you ever yeah. feel like that?
Yeah. Particularly with my second child, because she had some complications to her birth. She was born not breathing. So she has both autism and an intellectual disability. So I was on bed rest my last trimester of her pregnancy because it was just so hard on me. And there were, I would have this recurring dream nightmare, if you will, where I could rewind the day of the entire trip to the hospital. And then I was able to rewind it, and it's the same dream. It happened for maybe the first 2-3 years of her life. It came back once about a year or so ago, but it hasn't been back since. But for some reason, I was able to rewind to the day of the hospital stay, then rewind to the day, my pregnancy, and I was just able to not work at all and just give myself less stress instead of working up until that bed rest period. And then one day I realized, I was like, listen, I'm not God. This thing happened to me, and I have to do the best with what has been given to me. I mean, that's just, I finally came to that realization, but it took years, because it's hard. Part of this is a grieving process, mm-hmm. You know, because when you're pregnant with this child, there's just so many unknowns, and you have these dreams, and you have these aspirations, and then when your child comes out of you not breathing, I mean, there's a grieving process, and it's okay to grieve of how you thought your life would end up. Not that your new life is bad, it's just different. And sometimes it just takes time to change that mindset over, like, okay, this is my reality. How can I make this life as beautiful? Does that make sense?
It does. No, it really does. Because I'm sure you'd have imagined, you know, all the things you'd have done with your kids, like graduations and taking them to school and sports and all of these things that are likely not a reality, going to be a reality for you at all. And these are dreams that you would have had that are now lost.
So that's the beauty of this thing they call life, right? So my first child that was diagnosed, he got what we threw the kitchen sink at him. So we were in a state where healthcare was cheaper at the time. Texas is not a cheap healthcare state, by the way, but that's for another episode of your podcast.
so I told you, Texas.
Yes, Texas is a special place. So when it comes to healthcare, where we were before was Wisconsin. And this one child got the following. I want to make sure I remember everything. A regular pediatrician, a developmental pediatrician, a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, a speech therapist, a team of behavioral therapists, a special education teacher, a social skills teacher, a feeding therapist. I hope I didn't forget anybody on that team.
Oh, wow. Oh,
a child psychologist as well. So he had that for 2 years. He had the equivalent of almost 40 to 50 hours, like a job of therapy, every week for 2 years. So our first child went from that regression I told you about to, he's now in gifted and talented in our local school district. He went from talking not that much to talking too much. He actually, in the podcast that I'm starting soon, it's called Not Your Mama's Autism, because I live this weird deja vu existence where I watch my mom go through so much pain because she didn't have resources. Mm-hmm. And now I'm now with my children with a lot more resources. And I look at my son and think of what could have been for my brother.
Oh, wow.
So he's actually helping me out with the podcast. He's in an episode. And he really, he went from, like I said, not talking much. Now he negotiates with us. Sometimes I even sit down and just look back and just see how far he's come. And then my daughter, she moved to Texas with us when she was right around 2. So unfortunately, some of the resources she enjoyed in Wisconsin, it took us a while to get them here. So she's mostly still nonverbal, but she is beginning to pick up some words, and she does communicate with her iPad through, it's called an AAC, augmentative, and I forgot the second A, communication device, but there's a particular software program on there that helps her to talk. So when she wants to eat something, she'll say like, I, or drink something, the iPad will help her say, I want a drink.
Oh, wow.
So she's come a long way in her own right too, because a child born not breathing is now at least being able to communicate in some way. So I call them both my miracle children.
Oh, thank God for that. Thank God for his mercies. So they definitely have, so it's a spectrum, but they are on different, points on the spectrum. If you're saying yes. Their son is, he's verbal now, you say he talks too much.
Yes.
So I guess it's important for the audience to understand that autism, is different with everybody that it affects.
Yes. Okay. So there's an old adage that says when you've met one person on the spectrum, you've only met one person on the spectrum. And my babies are a perfect example of that. So my son exhibits autism in a way where some people on the spectrum have something called splinter skills, where they're very good in certain subjects. So he is in an accelerated math program. He reads 3 grade levels above his grade, and he had something called hyperlexia. So he kind of taught himself how to read. We taught him the alphabet, but he took it over from there. And then we have a Lero baby girl who, sometimes she shows aggression because she's so frustrated because she can't communicate what she truly wants to communicate to us. And she's also on the spectrum. So my house is a sitcom, basically.
I like how you put that. Before I move on to... guys, I sent Lola a list of questions. That's still on question 2, FYI.
Sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm gonna
stop. No. It's not even you, though, because I've been doing other questions as you're talking. And before we move on to question 3, in quotes, because you've mentioned your brother having autism and now your 2 children, just for the benefit of our audience, I feel like 1 or 2 people may ask or wonder, like, is it a family thing, like a genetic condition? Which I know it's not, but just for the benefit of people who don't know much, could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So that's the interesting thing about autism, at least as we sit here today in what 2020, is there is some research beginning to indicate that there could be some genetic components, which would make total sense in my case, but they're still not sure what causes autism. There's one theory that maybe there's some environmental factors that come into play, that takes place while the mother is pregnant. Like, certain people have predispositions to being more sensitive to certain environmental factors. We're not quite sure. And when you add on the, let me say it in my accent, the Niger component, where you know, family history is kind of a question mark, you know? So beyond my grandparents, and when I talk to my parents, their grandparents, they don't know of anyone in the family with autism. But then again, being Nigerian, we tend to hide those type of things.
Right.
So we're not quite sure. But I think personally that there could be a genetic component considering my personal situation. But I guess science is still figuring it out. When I was pregnant with my first child, I asked them, they were doing genetic testing. I asked if they could test for autism then, and that was, 2010, and they told me that that didn't exist yet. So I think science is still trying to figure that out.
Okay. Thank you for answering that. So moving on to the next question, 3 in quotes.
Well, we kind of answered that with my team, my autism
video. Right. Yeah. So the question was going to be, what kind of help or assistance you've had with your children, and while you were staying the different doctors and therapists that you had with your son, I think I counted like 10, at least 10 different kinds of therapies. But apart from like medical help, what other kind of help did you have, or have you had, or do you have with your kids?
The struggle is real, right? So the caretaker for the first 4 years of the diagnosis was me, because I took time off of my career to be a stay-at-home mom. Now in my current role pre-COVID, and again, autism during COVID is literally another episode of your podcast. But pre-COVID, we had, in order for my husband and I to both work full-time and them to go to school and be driven to all their therapies, we had 3 caretakers.
Oh, wow.
That took rotations. So if you add them onto the village, we had probably 11 or 12 people. And I forgot to add neurologist, I think, to the first list. Mm-hmm. But if you include the 3 caretakers and then the medical team, pre-COVID, we needed a team of, 10 to a dozen people just to make our house function. And I say that I know I have a certain level of privilege, because not everybody has that. I'm very aware of that. But for most people, most families in our situation, somebody has to stay home, because the child rearing in this situation is just so great. And it's the challenge, the call to this challenge is just so great.
Right. How have you approached parenting your children and like navigating their education, the therapies, and interactions outside the home? Because like you rightly stated, a lot of Nigerians would, Nigerians, we love you, we are Nigerians too, but most of the time would want to keep the child at home. I don't know if it's to hide, or we'll get to that topic later on in the discussion. But your son goes to school.
Yes, and my daughter does too.
And your daughter goes as well. So like, how have you navigated all of that?
Okay, so pre-COVID, how we navigated it was my husband and I went on something called an elementary school world tour. Before we bought our house, we interviewed the principals and special education teachers at 10 different schools in our school district.
Wow.
And we told them our situation, and because we have, like I said, 2 kids on 2 different ends of the spectrum. So we have the one child who is, I joke with my husband, is at the point where I don't even think I can help him out in school because I think he's like smarter than me some days, depending on the subject matter. And then I have baby girl who needs, at school, she needs speech therapy and occupational therapy and adaptive physical education. So we were able to find those two curriculums within the same school. So then we were lucky enough to find a house in that school district. And then we kind of tested out the school for a year and we really liked it. So we kind of changed our life around the school. We literally were just looking for a home that fit into a certain school. And that's how we tailored our entire life. We also looked for a home that was within 15 minutes of a nationally recognized children's hospital because we have baby girl who tends to have healthcare related complications. Quite frankly, because we're so public about our journey, there were some friends, including Nigerian friends, who just stopped talking to us because we were no longer considered the cool kids.
Oh, wow.
And that's fine. I mean, we've since made new friends. But that was hurtful, mm-hmm. you know? But we have a test. If we can truly be ourselves, if we can leave our children to run about and you don't look at our children like they have five heads between the two of them, then we can stay friends. But if I see a judgmental look or two or 17, we will likely not return to your home. And that's how we've lived our life, quite frankly. We definitely have strong allies and we have what I call friends from a distance who seem to only take us in chunks where it's either my husband alone or me and my husband alone out to certain parties, but they don't like it when the whole family together is together, if you know what I mean.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, and that's life. That's life. You wanted the real, girl. I gave you the real.
You know, okay, let's we'll go to that, to the question that I had in mind, asking about the kind of support you've had from friends and family, like positive support and negative support. To be honest, to be very, very honest, I really wasn't expecting. I mean, in the back of my mind, I guess I knew maybe some people would feel uncomfortable, but to the extent of like just avoiding and not speaking to you, and it's not like it's your fault. So that's why I'm kind of like stumped right now. Speechless. Like, is okay, this your fault?
Yeah, let me break it down further. So, okay, some people just aren't comfortable with a child that's not on the same developmental trajectory as their child. So my child, my baby girl, is 7 years old, but cognitively 3 years old. So a seven-year-old should be, you know, playing with Barbies and obviously talking and all these other things. And mine does not communicate in the same way. So we have had families who they just don't know what to do. So we got that admission. They ask, yes, but that doesn't mean they're comfortable. It's about people's comfort levels, quite frankly. Like, not everybody just, how can I say it? Just not everybody is comfortable. Today happens to be the 30th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and I was on a work call about it, and what was interesting to me was, I've never heard it said this way, but I think that's why people relate to my daughter like this, but some people think that you'll catch whatever special need the person has, so they just don't, that's how they behave, so they don't know what to do, so they kind of shy away naturally. I call it being drafted into the special forces unit of motherhood.
Right.
So you get drafted in. Some people may no longer feel comfortable with you. You live a very different life. You have to give your friends who have neurotypical children grace. Because I've had girlfriends call me up and say, oh, girl, I am so stressed out. I cannot stand it. And I'm thinking, I was like, if you had half of my day, you right. would run into traffic, right? But I have to give them grace because it's all about one's own unique perspective, right? It's all about your own personal experiences, your own perspective.
Right. It's all relative.
Yeah, it was all relative.
You have mentioned though that you have allies. So
yeah.
Can you speak to the positive support that you have received and are receiving from
those? Yes. Yes. So I have amazing, amazing allies, both in the Autism Army and outside. So we have a house fellowship at our church that we started with other parents of special needs children. And we've created a community there that has just been amazing. And then we have really strong allies who special need or no special need, but you can kind of just know by how they raise their kids that inclusion is important. So I have strong allies where Alero may not be able to play every game, but Alero feels extremely comfortable with them because they may take her hand and walk her around and talk to her and say, come with us. So she may not be able to play in the sport, but baby girl definitely wants to be a part of the show. And you could tell when she feels very comfortable. My husband calls it the baby girl test, that if they make her feel comfortable, then the whole family's comfortable. But those are our allies, the ones that include baby girl in the activities we partake in without it having to be a chore, if that makes sense.
Right. While you were talking, I just thought of this. Because you're having to spend a lot of time, or the kids are having to spend a lot of time with different therapies and all of that, do you have a lot of time for I guess extracurricular activities, like as adults?
That would be a no. That would be a strong no. The irony was, with the caretakers we had pre-COVID, was we were supposed to start to make more me time. That has proven to be difficult in COVID land, but we extracurricular for the kids or us. I'm sorry, did you say just generally for everybody or just?
Well, mostly for you as a mom.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that would be a strong negative. But the goal this year was to travel more and practice more self-care.
Yeah, nobody's traveling.
Yeah, but that didn't quite pan out. But I've learned different outlets, like just beginning to interview people and record my podcast has been a glorious outlet for me, and just taking long walks alone and exercising and just getting into the right headspace has turned into self-care during this period, and that's been helpful. But you really have to be intentional about it for parents in our situation. Because baby girl's not the type of child that you can just leave alone all the time. Mm-hmm. Or leave alone to, because we have an exercise room. Like, it's not something that you could leave her outside of the exercise room while you exercise. Like, you constantly have to have eyes on her.
Right.
So that's a challenge. So that's what we're kind of learning, to be creative and be nimble when it comes to that.
Okay. What impact has raising your children had on your career? You mentioned that you had to take some time off work. We said about 3 years, but what other impact has it had, like, on your marriage or your faith or you as a whole person?
So I jokingly mentioned before that I'm a recovering type A personality. So like in my 20s, like my 5-year plans, used to have 5-year plans. And I've learned through this experience to enjoy the beauty of the moment.
Yes.
In a way that I didn't do when I was younger at all. I was always chasing that next thing. You know, I'd be Nijan now. I have like 75 degrees, check, I did that. And then
maybe I tell you people should check out. You were telling me to just a lawyer. Please continue. I'm just a lawyer.
You know, there was a time where I was, you know, chasing career and chasing education and chasing whatever that next thing was. And I had a girlfriend that I called after I got the second diagnosis of autism. And I called her saying, what am I going to do? This is a major challenge. And she paused and she said, well, I guess you know what your calling is now. And it just stopped me dead in my tracks. And it made me start thinking like, okay, God, maybe this is part of my need to slow down and see what it is you want me to do with what you've given me. Because these children, I believe in my faith walk. I believe that motherhood is a faith walk. I think control can be an illusion. And I think if my two children are assignments from God, I will never hide them. I have to show other people how this can be done and still have a sense of humor and still keep your sanity and still keep your marriage and still do all these things and still work at the level that I work at and still have passion projects like this podcast, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do I show the world that? Because hiding it or going into denial, like unfortunately so many people in our culture have done with autism and special needs, hides real potential and hides your testimony, because too many people think they're going through this alone and they're not.
You're very right. That is very, very true. So you have just skipped to the next question. I love this interview. I ask you one question and you're answering 20 at the same time.
It's my profession. I'm sorry. I try and get like, I try to, you know, punch in a bunch of stuff at the same time. My bad.
It's okay. So what you just told us now, why, because what I was going to ask was why you've publicly chosen to share your experience when, as you rightly said, in our culture, we tend to shy away from talking about the hard things, like the struggles and
yes.
You know, it's all, oh, you don't air your dissonance in public. Oh, you don't talk about such things. Oh, no, be quiet. And why are you taking kids out? But that kind of thing. And it's really, really unfortunate because there are so many other people who are going through the same thing, like you said, and think that they're alone. They don't know what to do. They don't know what resources might be available out there. They don't know that there is support out there because people aren't talking.
Right.
Because we're not supposed to talk. Right. And that's, you guys have, anyone who has been listening to this podcast, you know that this is why I started the podcast, to have you know, the hard conversations, to talk about the things that people are not talking about, to spread awareness about whatever it is that, you know, the topic is. So, Lola, would you, what advice would you give to other African women who have autistic or special needs children?
Like I said, you might not have chosen this life, but you've been drafted into the Special Forces Unit of Motherhood, and you have a child, when it comes to autism, you have a child whose brain functions unconventionally, and that's okay. Your life may have to change drastically, whether it be for a season, like with my son, or for a lifetime. We don't know with baby girl, but that too is okay. And you are stronger than you think. And your goal now is to figure out what resources you have in your area, wherever that may be, US, Niger, UK, wherever. And remember that your focus now is to make sure your children are the best versions of themselves, not based on what you think they should be, but look at the gifts within them that God has provided and go from there. And you may have to get creative, but if you invest in these children now, it will pay off later.
Thank you. Are there any other ways, you know, apart from my audience listening to this podcast, are there any other resources that they can read up on or watch to learn more about autism or to just be more aware?
Sure. The CDC website has a whole section on autism. Autism Speaks website can get you up to speed on the resources in your area throughout the United States. Autism Parenting Magazine, it's an online magazine. I get it through email monthly, but it is a wonderful resource. Everything from potty training a child whose brain functions unconventionally, to school, to how to develop social skills, et cetera, et cetera. Like I mentioned, I'm launching a podcast called Not Your Mama's Autism, available anywhere you can get podcasts, beginning in August. And I would also look at NIH, also tends to have good, solid, scientifically based information. And there's a PSA I want to add in there. When your kid has special needs and you're going through this grieving process, it's very easy to kind of go off the beaten path to certain websites that may claim certain things. Just please, you know, buyer beware in that space, because there is, you know, that underbelly of people that, you know, are trying to take advantage of parents in our situation. So please only go to trusted sources.
Thank you. I have one more question that's not on our list. That's just, sure. I've asked you like 20 questions that were not on the list anyways. But, you know, Nigerians can be very, very religious. And you're obviously a woman of faith. You obviously are a strong Christian. But I still kind of feel like there's some people that will be like, eh, well, because like when I was trying to get pregnant, I had people say, eh, well, you're not praying hard enough, or you don't know how to do it. Which I'm like, in fact, let's not go there. But I almost feel like there would be some people who would say, well, maybe you didn't pray hard enough, or maybe you're not praying hard enough for healing, or, you know, something along those lines. Like, what would you say to them?
Yeah, that has happened to me already. People have taken upon themselves to pick up the phone and give me tons of unsolicited advice about this. Yes, I'm a Christian. Yes, I still pray. Of course, it's natural to pray for your children and for them to not have some of the challenges they have. My answer to them has always been, nobody can pray more for one's child than one's mother. But then beyond that, I told them, I said, what happens? I know to some people this is blasphemy, but what happens if part of God's will is for your child to have this special need in order for you to show the world love unconditionally in a different type of way? What happens if that is part of my ministry? And then that's when they tend to be dumbfounded, because I don't know any other woman in my situation. I have a brother who is nonverbal with autism, and I watched him grow up with very little resources. I picked up a book when I was 14 years old called Let Me Hear Your Voice. My mother was in her grieving period, and I said, Mom, there's a woman in a book I read. She has not one baby with autism, but two. She's in a far more challenging position than you. I thought that book was for my mother. That book was for me. Because 20 years later, I would not only have one child with autism, but two. In that book is when I heard a medical term called applied behavioral analysis therapy. That is the very therapy I knew to ask for when my first child was diagnosed.
Wow.
So if someone wants to now tell me that I'm not praying hard enough, perhaps this is the journey that God wants me to be on. And that's okay too. Not my will, but His be done.
Amen to that. There's nothing that is a surprise to God. He knew everything that was going to happen. He knows everything that's going to happen. And He positions us to be able to, like, He gives us the grace and the tools to speak to His glory, no matter what it is that we're facing. It's just up to us to actually use those tools, to use our stories, to use our messages and our testimonies for His glory.
And it's okay to cry some days. It's perfectly okay to cry. Just keep moving forward. Just keep moving forward. I heard a pastor say this several years ago, and I kind of stole it from him. I'm sorry. But it's called leading while bleeding. As long as you, if you're bleeding, as long as you're still moving forward. Because showing you're human too is not a terrible thing. But you just have to keep moving forward.
Oh, Lola. Oh, Lola.
I know I'm a weirdo, but that's what
No, please. You're not. I'm a weirdo. You're not. No, like. You need to, this is, you have the gift of, Oh, it's God that will bless you.
Amen, my sister. Amen, amen, amen. And same to you. Big virtual hugs. Thank big you. Virtual hugs from the Texas city you like. Big virtual hugs.
Thank you so, 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 so very much, Lola. Thank you so much. I cannot appreciate you enough. I really, really can't. And I have to say, though, thanks to, I don't know your husband, but thanks to your husband, too, because he seems like he's been a real big support. Like, it's not just you that he's also actively involved. Yeah.
Yes, so, definitely.
Yeah.
And that's actually going to be a whole episode of the podcast called Boy Meets Girl. But when you remember, I grew up with a baby brother on the spectrum. So when I was dating my husband, I was getting serious. I said, listen, if you're serious about me, please note, because I think I was in law school then. I was like, please note. I had to put in that disclaimer, right? That disclaimer language. I said, please note that we come as a package deal. He's like, who's the we? And I said, my brother. And he came home for that Thanksgiving and he took care of my brother like it was his little brother. And that's when I knew I could marry him. And then
God bless your husband.
So one day at a time, one day at a time, because I, beyond my wildest dreams, I didn't know I would then have two babies on the spectrum, and he has been a trooper. So that's why I really think this, my story is way beyond me. I really do.
I agree. God bless you, and God bless your husband as well. And God bless your beautiful children as well. Just to close out, how can people, if anyone wants to get in contact with your, follow your podcast or email you, how can they reach you?
Okay, on my Instagram, I'm at Not Your Mama's Autism. I have a Facebook page of the same name and Twitter. You could contact me through any of those forms. That's probably the best way. Actually, my husband is starting a autism dads support group. I won't say, he's participating in it. There's a nonprofit that kind of set this all up, but he's one of the, I guess, founding participants, if you will. And I believe that's August 4th. I'm not sure when you're getting this out, but it's going to be a monthly support group for any type of special needs dads, because I think so much, so often the focus is on the moms, but the dads really need help too. And he's going to be a part of that. So I will be posting that on my social media for dads that are interested for that very reason.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll share all the links in the show notes for this episode. Okay. Lola, thank you again so much for being a guest on the Mommy Oyoyo podcast today. It's been so enlightening. I've learned a lot, and just thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. I've had a really wonderful time speaking with you, and God bless your whole entire family, and we'll definitely be staying in touch.
Definitely. God bless you too. Big hugs. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mommy Oyoyo podcast. Out of everything you could be doing, you chose to spend the time with me, and I am truly grateful. Please follow us on social media at Mommy Oyoyo, which is MOMMYOYOYO. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Feel free to send us feedback and suggestions that way or via our email at mommyoyoyo@gmail.com. Also, subscribe to the Mommy Oyoyo podcast on your favorite podcast players. Rate and review the podcast. And finally, don't keep this goodness to yourself. Share the Mommy Oyoyo podcast with your friends, your family, your coworkers, and more. The Mommy Oyoyo podcast, sharing experiences of African motherhood. Mommy Oyoyo, Mommy Oyoyo, Mommy Oyoyo. See you next time. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Mommy Oyoyo podcast. As usual, it's me, your favorite podcaster, Berry Dakara. This is episode 50. It's a milestone episode, and I'm excited. I am proud of myself. I feel pretty accomplished. I remember 2 years ago when I thought about, you know, the possibility of this podcast, I think I've shared that I wrote out a list of potential episodes. And that list is actually by my bedside table. And every now and then I take a look at it. I was just looking at it tonight. And I definitely did not have up to 50 topics written out. But the funny thing about it is I haven't even covered half of the topics I wrote on that list at all. So there's still so much more to come for the Mommy Oyoyo podcast. And I just want to say thank you to everyone who has listened. Thank you to everyone who has shared. And thank you most especially to everyone who has been a guest on the podcast. Thank you so much for sharing your stories. Thank you for being authentic and being brave and courageous to, you know, share your stories. In today's episode, I'm speaking with Lola Dada Oli, and this episode is really special. It deals with a really heavy topic. Lola is a mom of two children who are on the autism spectrum. And if you guys know Nigerians or maybe even Africans don't really talk much about autism. And if you go on Google, there are a lot of articles about how autistic children are hidden away from society back home. But Lola shared her experience with her children. And even though it's a heavy topic, Lola brings a certain lightness to the discussion so that you don't feel, you know, overwhelmed. And I know it's an overwhelming experience for her and for other parents that have children with autism. I know that it's hard, but just knowing that there's somebody out there, somebody else out there who is going through the same thing, I think lends a certain sense of, you know, maybe some inspiration, and just knowing that you're not alone, that there are other people out there who have gone before you, who are experiencing the same things as you. In this episode, while we talk, Lola doesn't share this particular tidbit. But after we recorded the episode, she told me about trying to reach out to another Nigerian family. Like when she found out about her son having or being on the autism spectrum, a friend of hers told her about a Nigerian family that had raised a child with autism who had gone on to be, I think, an engineer or a doctor or something, but like high achieving. And when she tried to make contact with that family, they decided they didn't want to speak to her. They didn't want to share any knowledge or share their experience with her. And for her, that was a defining moment for her. And she said then that she would never be in a position where she could potentially help another family dealing with autism and then would not go ahead and help them out. So this conversation with her is part of what she believes is her ministry, and I agree too. It's part of her ministry in, you know, reaching out and helping other parents with children that have autism or even special needs. So I think you're going to really learn a lot from this episode. Thank you so much to Lola for speaking with me. And yeah, everyone, please just listen to the episode. If it resonates with you, please rate the podcast on Apple and other podcast players and share the episode as well with as many people as you can. I would really, really, really appreciate it. Thank you again for listening, and I love you.